You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
I am Walter Peck, sir, and I'm prepared to make a full report. These men are consummate snowball artists. They use sense and nerve gases to induce hallucinations. People think they're seeing ghosts. And they call these bozos who conveniently show up to deal with the problem with a fake electronic light show.
Everything was fine with our system until the power grid was shut off by Dickless here.
They caused an explosion!
Is this true?
Yes, it's true. This man has no dick.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves!
Make love in the hammock!
What? Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 72 for the 22nd of January, 2012. I am Dave McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
Yes, I am here. That's about all I got right now. Sorry, I've been at work all day.
I could just about pre-record your intro, couldn't I?
Well, then maybe I'll surprise you next week just to mess with you.
Cool. All right. We're also joined by Richard Gray. How are you, Richard?
I'm fantastic, David.
Oh, that's so good to hear, Richard.
I'm sitting here with a margarita and saying, hey, I'm ready to record.
And here we are recording.
That wasn't what you were saying before the show started. Just saying.
No, Sam. Hey, we got to record this thing soon.
No, actually, Josh, do you know what he was saying before the show?
Oh, it's really dark in here.
That's what he was saying before the show.
Couldn't you just tell Josh there was going to be a soundboard moment coming?
There'll be soundboard fighting by the end of the night. I get feeling coming.
And part of me just went, oh. You know?
This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. This week we make the change. So this week we hit menopause. No, this week. It's episode 72. We can hit menopause if we want to. No, this is the week we make the change. The news section is officially its own show. So be looking for that on the feed. Our motto for that show is loud, fast, and under 30 minutes or your money back. And we hope it will be. So there you
Warning,
go.
No money will be exchanged.
No money is exchanged and it's a free podcast. Can we please remind people that it's a free podcast?
If you are paying for this, you're probably being ripped off.
Because yes. We ain't seeing nothing.
And if you are paying for this, can you tell us who it's from so we can go collect? All right. This week we are reviewing the new spy thriller, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. And we also have a brand new list of five inspired by a listener, which we will come back to a little bit later in our feedback section. But our list is, and I'm not even going to explain this at this point, it's just five great number twos, which I love. So we will come back and we'll explain that just a little bit later on. First, though, we like to start this show off with a section that we like to call What Have We Been Watching? And we'll start with Richard this week. Richard?
You know what I like about the title of the section?
Yeah.
It accurately describes what the section's about.
It does, doesn't it? And the spookiest part is I think I actually stole it from Slash Filmcast, but that's all right.
Well, there you go.
Don't sue us.
Don't sue us.
Don't sue us. No sue. I've been watching a stack of stuff, including Shame with Michael Fassbender, which I came to the revelation that Michael Fassbender has a penis.
I was about to say, the only thing I've heard about this film so far is that he's hung like a horse.
Yeah, like he's got a penis. I wouldn't say a horse, but at least a small mule. You know,
he has a tree trunk dangling between his knees. Apparently,
he has a penis, and you see it frequently. But I'm going to skip over that because we'll probably be talking about that later down the track somewhere.
Will we?
I don't know. Will we? We might all be in shock after seeing this penis. So.
I'm looking at that. In fact, that's all I'm going to say on the film, just let you work out what sort of films I've been seeing.
Okay, cool.
You asked me to talk about two films in particular I'd seen this week.
Yes.
Well, three, in fact. There's The Darkest Hour, Journey 2, The Mysterious Island, and Young Adult.
Okay, so let's combine a couple of these because you're the only one of us that's seen Darkest Hour.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have seen Young Adult, and all three of us have seen Journey 2. So let's take this in order. You start with Darkest Hour.
Okay. It's shit.
Okay, let's move on. No, okay, what makes it shit?
Bad dialogue, bad acting, bad special effects. It's kind of almost as if after the initial promising setup, because it does have that promising setup of like five survivors when a global catastrophe hits, and like the whole city's emptied out, and you almost get that vibe like it's going to be a Dawn of the Dead or any of those classic, you know, Last Man Standing, you know, the you know, like the kind of
I Legend,
exactly. Yeah. All those kind of things like that. The
Omega Man, okay.
Yeah, and you kind of get that vibe from it to start with, and then it's at a certain point, like after the first act, the director's gone, you know what, guys, you just make it up as you go along from here. And it doesn't, it just goes off. At one point, they just stop and try on clothes, you know, and there's another point, you know, and it's just, it does get incredible, and there's really, really bad dialogue, you know, things like, this is where it starts, you know, just really, really, oh, no. Emile Hirsch is better than this.
Really?
Yeah.
Show me evidence. Well, yeah.
He was in Into the Wild.
Hey, he was in Speed Racer. And he was in
Speed Racer. You know, it's terrible. It really is bad. And the only it was good that I saw this before Journey 2, because it actually made Journey 2 seem like a masterpiece.
Okay, okay. We're going to come back to Journey 2.
Talk about that in a minute, but yeah. Young Adult is the next one.
The three of us will come back to Journey 2 in a minute. Okay, Young Adult is the latest film by Jason Reitman, who is a hot favorite of mine. Thank You for Smoking and Up in the Air are two absolutely brilliant films, and I think Juno is, I know it's arguable, but I think his direction wasn't the problem and her performance wasn't the problem. The problem was Diablo Cody's script with that film. But it's actually an okay film. It's well made, and I don't think he's capable of actually making a terrible film.
No.
And now his new film is with Charlize Theron, once again written by Diablo Cody. Now, the problem I had with this film, I actually really liked this film. The problem I had with it was the script. What did you feel about this? We haven't had a chance to talk about this beforehand, so I'd like to know what you thought.
No, well, I think that it's probably Diablo Cody's strongest script to date.
I agree.
She's toned back a lot of that kind of conceit that she has about tapping into that particular valley way of speaking, you know, which she did in this, and she did in Jennifer's Body, and she has to a certain extent in the TV show United States of Tara.
Yep. Although what I thought was funny about this script was that she's actually almost taking the mickey out of herself by the fact that her writer is overhearing young girls talk and then she's just writing them down.
No, exactly. And I think that's exactly what it does. I think she's actually almost speaking directly to the audience, because the character is almost her, I think, in some ways. And it's kind of interesting that I read somewhere that almost all of her characters are women who have an obviously social stigmatized problem. So, like, you know, Juno's teen pregnancy, United States of Tara's dissociative identity disorder, you know, multiple personalities. Hmm. And in here, it's, you know, she's an alcoholic. And
what's, Jennifer, what's Jennifer's body?
Jennifer's body, exactly. You know, she's an alcoholic and all those sorts of things. Yeah, well, you know, Jennifer's body, she was psychotically killing people.
It's an aspect of her life, obviously.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. But in you know, behind all that, it was just still someone who was socially awkward or having a social problem or had an inner struggle that they were trying to overcome. You know, that is, I mean, look, there are some fabulous characters in this. I mean, Patton Oswalt, you and I spoke about, or you spoke about that before I saw the film, and I agree with you. He is an amazing character.
Oh, he's the best thing in the film by far.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just a fantastic character. And if you talk about number twos, as we're going to talk about later, he is a great number two. You know what I mean?
He's a great number two.
He's fantastic. And I thought Charlize Theron was terrific as well as the absolute sociopath. I mean, she's nuts.
She is. She is psychotic in this film. And it's kind of, She's obviously stuck in time, and you know, the whole film's kind of like about that A little bit speaking about that, you know, a generation struggling to reconcile with, you know, kind of the idea that half their generation's moved on and some of them are stuck behind and all that kind of thing. But she is sort of her least even though she's like the most beautiful person in the small town that she goes back to, it's kind of one of her least glamorous roles shy of Monster.
Well, what's funny is that she's actually so unglamorous and then about two or three times in the film does herself up and you actually see the amount of work that goes in to doing herself up. There's a part where she's putting makeup on. It's like spec filler.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she coats her entire face in it. It's like you sit there and she has to wear the hair extensions because she picks at her hair all the time to the point where she's got a red raw wound on the back of her head, you know?
Yeah.
And she's just a wonderful character study in just, there's no other way to put it. She's a sociopath. She's nuts. She just has no social graces at all. She's completely wrapped up in her own world and doesn't see anything outside of her little circle. She just uses everybody around her. And she's amazing. Yeah. I mean, she's Diablo Cody should be proud. She's written an amazing character. The problem I had with the script was the resolution.
Yeah, the ending isn't satisfying and it doesn't entirely fit with the rest of the film. But I think that even so, it's a film that will kind of linger with you and you'll think about, because certainly for my generation, it resonates really strongly.
Yeah,
so
I liked it a lot. Don't get me wrong. I actually liked the film a lot. I just didn't like the ending. I don't think Diablo Cody knew how to finish it. And that's how it feels. It feels like she didn't know how to finish it. And it's what you get is an underlying message from the film that is actually distasteful.
Yeah.
And so you kind of go, ooh, that really doesn't ring true in a film that is actually pretty solid all the way through. And you sit there and go, wow, that really didn't ring at all true. You know? Anyway, so that's Young Adult. Josh, you have to see this film. It's you'd like the characters.
Wonderful. I will look it up.
Okay, now that brings us to Journey to the Mysterious Island. And we're going to let Josh start this off because we've been dominating the conversation here. Josh, what did you think of Journey to the Mysterious Island?
I had this strange realization when I left the cinema, Dave, which is that about an hour afterwards, I realized that all I could remember from that entire film was The Rock.
And his pectoral muscles.
And his wonderful pectoral muscles.
His pec pop of love, I believe.
Look, it's a mess. It's disturbingly bad. It is, as we discussed when we walked out, certain characters looked like they may have been drinking on set. The cohesion. Can we just talk about the terrible cohesion between these characters? I mean, you just have the really hot girl that in real life would never speak to him at all. You have, what's his name, the token Mexican guy. Who is just playing the worst part of himself in this film. You have The Rock just trying to play the happy guy, which I don't quite understand.
Rock's in full Race to Witch Mountain mode. He really is.
Dude, absolutely. And then on top of all of this wonderment that we saw in this film, it's like going on a vacation with, like, you know, New Jersey people. It's like they don't actually stop to take in anything. They just basically yell at each other and create havoc and then take off and go to the next area. It's like this island is full of mystery and amazing CG. Like, I gotta say, they did a really good job at painting a place, but it's just full of really annoying people. And everything that is apparently dangerous on this island, I don't remember seeing. Did either of you guys remember actually seeing anything that was that dangerous? And like, we saw, like,
they kind of hint at things that are going to be dangerous and then never pay off on them, like the scratches on the tree. And then
the ants.
With the ants. And then they never actually pose a danger. I said this when we came out of the cinema. I said, it felt to me like a writer's room where one writer would go, do you know what would be fucking cool? They ride bees. And another writer goes, but how do they get on the bees? He goes, who cares?
And you're not thinking about the bigger picture.
That's right. The whole film feels like that. It's like suddenly they're riding bees, then they're stepping on eggs, then they're doing this. Then it's like, but none of it makes any coherent sense.
Well, can I say that the writers were Brian and Mark Gunn, who were best known before this for the direct-to-video sequel Bring It On Again.
Oh, man.
Really?
Pedigree or what?
That is a step down.
And all I can really say to that is,
it's really dark in here.
There you go.
You know, look, I actually didn't like, you know, a bit like Josh, all I can remember is The Rock, and The Rock abides. I mean, he really does, you know, just like, when his cheesy grin just comes sliding into frame at any, like, you know, moment of sort of romance between Hutchison and Hutchins, which, as you said, wouldn't happen in real life. And so they kind of pop that with just The Rock sliding into frame going, do the peck pop of love.
You know? I'm sorry, it never actually occurred to me until you just said it sounds like a law firm, Hutchins and Hutchinson.
Hutchinson and Hutchins, we're here to serve. Yeah, look, I mean, it's The Rock's movie. The others are just window dressing.
And can we talk about Michael Caine for just a minute, please?
Oh, like, talk about Michael Caine for a second.
This is the worst Michael Caine since Jaws the Revenge. This is a Michael Caine who's putting an extension on his house and looked drunk between every take.
I think in this film, sorry, Richard, I'm going to let you finish. But I think in this film, he may have finally realized that there are certain films he should possibly avoid, even if he is trying to put an extension on his house. Because he just looked angry throughout this whole film. Like, he was like, I don't want to be here, and you guys are all idiots, and this film is shallow and shit. And that was what I got every time he acted.
It was almost like he was saying, okay, once I finish here, I'm back on the Dark Knight Rises set.
This is like a minor spoiler, but there's a scene where he turns up dressed in motorcycle leathers. And how awkward did he look?
Yeah. Well, also this film has massive logic flaws all the way through it. Okay, minor spoilers for Journey 2, but they arrive on the island. I guess we kind of all knew they were going to the island, right? They find him, and he takes them back to his house, right? Now, mind you, he's alone on this island. So why does he have things like a do not disturb sign and stuff like that in his house?
Oh, it's just creature comforts. You
know, like, I was thinking that was just, you know, sort of internal, you know, sort of trying to make yourself feel like you were at home.
No, do you know what it is? Yeah. It's, once again, it's those writers. One writer went, do you know what would be cool? He could have a do not disturb sign on his bed. And the other writer would say, why would he have that? He goes, who cares?
This is during...
Who cares? We got bees!
We got bees!
Yeah, no, there is not much thought in this film at all. But you know what I loved about that final scene? I just want to come back to what you were saying, Richard, about him in those leathers, is I just expected him to jump over something, like a literal jump the shark moment. Like, I was actually waiting for it. I just want him to say, hey, man, come outside. I'm going to jump a motorcycle over three
shark
cars.
Prepared early.
Yeah, he'd have to jump over those little tiny elephants.
Tiny elephants are the best.
They are the best thing.
Also, hang on, one other logic flaw in that film, and I think we all spotted this one, was that on the island, everything big is meant to be small, and everything small is meant to be big. So you have tiny elephants, giant bees. Yet there were points where they were crawling through caves, and cockroaches and ants and things were the right size.
And fireflies.
And fireflies were the right size because they were convenient to the plot, so you could bottle them and stick them in a jar and make them into lights. But when it wasn't convenient to the plot, they were massive or small.
I was going to say, how awesome would a giant firefly have been? It would have been like holding up an arc light or something.
Yeah, they could have ridden that when they were going at night.
It would have been like a flare. I thought it was a really stupid film. It was really dumb.
This was mind-breakingly shit.
And the fact that you actually tell me The Darkest Hour is worse is terrifying.
Yeah.
Well, actually, because I actually had a little bit of fun, I have to admit, in Journey 2. So,
I will give Journey 2 some props. Josh, you're absolutely right. The special effects are awesome. The CG work is brilliant, and the 3D work is really good. I mean, the film is shot in 3D, just like the first Journey.
Oh, dude, Earth. Those small little tiny fruits bouncing off the rock's nipples at the camera, that was fantastic.
Absolutely. So
that,
you know,
was what 3D was made for.
Technically, the film is actually really well put together. Its structure and direction and writing and acting is a problem. You know,
it's the same director as the last Cats and Dogs movie.
I didn't see it. I couldn't bring myself to watch it.
I had running in the background at work. I don't think I want to hear it with the sound on.
Oh dear, that good, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty special.
See, I quite like the first Cats and Dogs, and then I saw the trailer for Cats and Dogs 2, and I just went, oh.
Well, the first Cats and Dogs was written by Requa and Ficarra, who of course gone on to do things like Crazy Stupid Love.
Well, there you go. That makes sense. Yeah. And that makes sense because it's quite funny. I've got one more film I just want to mention really quickly. I actually watched last night the Blu-ray of Cowboys and Aliens, which is the extended cut. It's actually about 10 minutes longer. And I actually really, really enjoyed it again. I actually really liked Cowboys and Aliens, you know that, and there's a lot of people who don't, but and I'm not quite sure why. I still can't figure it out to this day, but I quite liked it. But I will say the extended cut is actually really good.
Does it have 10 more minutes of Olivia Wilde?
It actually has a few more minutes of Olivia Wilde, definitely. there you go. But it's actually got little character bits all the way through it, which actually kind of expand out the characters. And in particular, the romance between Olivia Wilde and Daniel Craig was always a little bit rushed in the film, where the idea where he was kind of falling for her. Mm. In the Blu-ray version, there's actually a couple of extra scenes to that, so it actually kind of gives it more emotion when she does ditch him, basically. And I think
spoilers.
That spoilers. Well, the film's already out. What do I care? No, sorry. But it actually does help it along a little bit. So it is worth having a look at on Blu-ray, and it looks sensational on Blu-ray.
All right. Yeah. I'll check it out, finally.
Yeah,
Olivia Wilde in high def. I'd like to see her extra.
I was really hoping in the extra 10 minutes there'll be a little bit more of her walking out of the fire, but anyway.
You know, that's what slow motion's for, man.
You know what I'm talking about.
I swear to God, would you stop with the spoilers?
It's in the trailer, dude.
Anyway,
all right, let's move on to a feature review. I think we've milked this section as much as we can milk it for. All right, so with this week, our feature film is Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. Is the new film directed by Thomas Alfredson, who directed Let the Right One In. You were going to correct me, weren't you? You thought I was going to say the wrong film there, didn't you?
It was that big dramatic pause beforehand. I thought, oh, God, he's forgotten. I'm going to save him.
I haven't forgotten. It's written by Bridget O'Connor and Peter Strawn, I think it's pronounced, or Strawn. Strawn, okay, and based on the Jean Le Carré novel. Now, the cast is immense. Let's just go with some of the top ones to start with. Gary Oldman, of course, stars in it. But co-starring with Gary Oldman, Colin Firth, Tom Hardy, Mark Strong, John Hurt, Toby Jones, Kieran Hines, who else is in this? Benedict Cumberbatch. Who else is in this? There's got to be another couple more great British performers in here, because I think they cast just about every British performer working today. And a few non-British people.
And good on them.
The story is, in the bleak days of the Cold War, espionage veteran George Smiley is forced from semi-retirement to uncover a Soviet agent within MI6's echelons, according to our ever-faithful IMDb. There is a lot more to it than that, though. That's the base story. But there's a lot more happening. We do have a trailer. We'll play that right now. And we'll come back and talk about this.
There is a mole right at the top of British intelligence. He's been there for years.
For 25 years, we've been the only thing standing between Moscow and the Third World War.
I'm retired. You're outside the family. You're well placed to look into this for us now.
I'll do my utmost.
I know that it is one of these men. All I want from you is one code name. Tinker. Tailor. Soldier. Spy.
I need you to do something.
I'm going to have to send you up into the lion's den. If you're caught.
What the hell are you doing up here?
Can't mention me.
I know who you are. I have something to trade. Something big.
She told me a secret.
The mother of all secrets.
She had information concerning a double agent.
You have to assume they're watching you.
Things aren't always what they seem.
It's become so ugly.
We're not so very different, you and I. We're both looking for the weaknesses in one another.
Okay, so I saw this film months ago now. Who saw it most recently? Josh saw it most recently.
That would be me, yeah.
All right, Josh, you're, it's freshest in your mind. You tell us what you thought.
It's amazing because I went into this film and I had heard pretty much everybody on the planet say that it was amazing. And I really tried to flush that out of the system because the biggest problem that you can do with a film like this is kind of oversell it to yourself and walk out disappointed. But one of the things that I found interesting was I got to the cinema and it was like there was thousands of people lined up for whatever the new and dumbest film was out there, and only about 9 people in my cinema to watch the film with me. That's unrealistic. It was about 20 or 30. It's sort of, I sat there and I watched it all, and look, I'm straight out of the gate. Let's just get it over with. It is fucking incredible. Like, it is a really, really good film. What I couldn't help but notice was the two guys beside me that went, that was the fucking stupidest film I've ever seen in my life. So there is definitely bipolar nature to whether you like this film or not. And I kind of get why, because it's like, if you didn't take the time to sit down and think about it and actually watch it and pay attention, then you probably won't like this film, because it's straight from the word go, it sets up that it will take its time and you're just going to have to deal with that. Like, even I felt in the first 5-10 minutes almost uncomfortably shifting in your seat, because you're just so used to films just cutting really quickly and moving fast and not wasting time on anything or spending time on shots. And it's, I think you said it, Dave, and I'm going to steal your thunder here.
Okay.
But you said that it's nice to see a film that treats you like an adult.
Mm.
And I think that is about the most poignant thing you can say about this film, because that's exactly what it is. It is a film for adults.
Absolutely. Agreed. Richard, first initial thoughts?
Well, first of all, I got Josh's audience story beat. In my cinema, there was one woman who was clearly drunk and then nodded off halfway through and started snoring a bit. And there was also a guy in front of me who actually went off, disappeared a couple of times, and then came back with his shopping and sat down and watched the end of the movie. So, like, you know, if you're going to go and see Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, do not do either of those things, because as Josh has already said, this is a movie that demands your full attention.
Yeah, it's dense. Can we just say that right off the bat? This is a really dense movie. There's a lot going on.
And I want to echo Josh's sentiments in saying it's also fucking amazing. It's one of those movies that if you do pay attention, it is a rich, complex tapestry that is rewarding at every point. And it is kind of, and what Josh was saying, it is off-putting, because there are these long stretches of stillness, and we're so used to having every frame filled with something, and every frame is filled with something, but sometimes that something is just Gary Oldman sitting quietly.
Yeah, agree.
Sometimes it's just an observational thing. These are spies; they observe. That's what they do. That's what we're doing.
Things. Richard, one of my favorite scenes in the entire film is when they're driving to a particular location. You've got these two veteran spies, and then on the other side, you've got one of the younger dudes, and there's a fly in the car. And I thought this scene was fantastic, because the young guy is swiping at the fly, trying to get it away from him, and then Gary Oldman, about a minute later, just opens up the window lightly, and the fly just flies out of the window. And it's like, things like that are so much more than just a scene. Like, it's an explanation of the kind of personalities. It's a breakdown of these people as characters. It's like, you have to be ready to understand moments like that and to also take in what they have to say. And it's like, if you weren't paying attention, then you're going to miss them.
Absolutely. I think you just summed it up, though, as well, Josh. This film is a character study. And it's not about fast plotting. It's not about who's gonna hit who or whatever the plot might be. It is a character study. It is about these people, in particular Smiley. It's Gary Oldman, and it's about his investigation and how he deals with this. And it's about it's about Benedict Cumberbatch and how he deals with having to be a field agent for the first time, you know? And let's face it, that scene, we won't spoil it until we get into spoilers, but that scene in the library is genius. You know, it's just a brilliant piece of work. I think Thomas Alfredson not only nailed the period, the time period, perfectly, but he also nailed how films were made in those days. Yeah. The film feels like an early 70s movie, you know, and it's a really amazing time capsule. It's just brilliant. I love the fact that Gary Oldman does not utter a word for the first 15 minutes of this film. He just sits there watching what's going on around him. You know, I love all the characters. I love Mark Strong. You know, I love that opening scene at the coffee shop and the little touches in it, like the guy sweating. You know, and it's such lingering camera shots where you go, you're taking in everything that's going on around you. I was blown away by this film. I put it in my top five films of the year. I thought this was just genius. I thought it was so refreshing to watch a film that didn't talk down to its audience. It basically said, here's the story, keep up. You know,
The other thing that I found interesting, man, is after watching this film, I look back and realize that last year's films, though interesting, and there were a few decent ones, it just reminded me of how long it's been since I've seen a film so powerful and so strong and with so much energy and effort in it that when I walked out of the cinema, I had nothing to say for 10 minutes. I couldn't say anything. I was still processing what I had seen. And it has been a ridiculous amount of time since that's happened.
Yeah, I was kind of felt the same way when I came out. I was around critics, so there was some talking going on. But it was a film where I didn't really want to talk very much about at the first, you know, the first 5-10 minutes. It was a film where I was just taking in everything I had just seen. I can gush about this film all night long. I don't actually have very many things to say bad about this film. The only thing I would say about this film is it's not going to be for everybody, and we can see that by the polarizing reviews that are coming out. Some people hate it, and some people love it. And there doesn't seem to be very much middle ground. Because I think what's happening is the people who hate it, they're not expecting this. They're expecting a spy thriller.
Yeah.
Either that, or they're expecting the Alec Guinness miniseries.
Well, the thing is about the spy thriller, in the last, you know, 10 years, it's completely changed. It's like, you know, the Bourne films have given modern audiences an expectation as to what spy thrillers are. James Bond as well. You know, that's 50 years of James Bond films gives us, you know, a certain expectation. So when you get a film which is very much spy procedural almost, but that's also very, very thrilling and tense. And also things like Gary Oldman's character. Gary Oldman was perfectly cast, and then he's in this room full of these huge personalities like Benedict Cumberbatch and Kieran Hines, and certainly Colin Firth. And he's just very still and quiet in the center of this. And that's just such a weird dichotomy that people don't know what to make of it, I guess.
I think so. I really do think this is a film which people just don't understand what it is. And it's interesting because on the other side of the ocean, it has been accepted a lot better. It was a huge hit across England and Europe. And it kind of came to a brick wall when it hit the American coast.
The BAFTAs, the British Academy of Film and Television Awards, it's got something like 11 or 12 nominations, which is the second highest number of nominations for the year. Really like so in the UK, it's got home ground advantage, but it is one of the few places it's recognizing it so strongly.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Americans. Well, I hate to bring them up all the time, but you know, I was actually listening to Slash Filmcast's review of this film, and they didn't like it. They were really not just didn't like it. There was a couple of them were vehemently against it, you know, and it was really interesting hearing them talk about it and their opinions of it. And I'm sitting there going, "Wow, that's not the film I got. That's not the film I walked away from." You know, and I think that's what's happening is that people are going to see it and they're just going, "I don't get it." You know, aren't I supposed to be seeing a spy thriller? I guess we got to redefine the term. This is more of a spy drama than a spy thriller. You know,
I think it's more a character piece. Like that's honestly what I think it is. I mean, it's not for the general viewer. It's for the kind of person that loves film.
I think you've hit upon something there, Josh. I think that's exactly it, Josh. It's a character piece, and the characters happen to be spies.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, no, it really is, because it's like the acting in some of the scenes of this film are just like more than just mesmerizing. They're just, they will stop you and just paralyze you just watching almost nothing happen. But it's just the fact that these people just have full control over their emotion and just so brilliantly shot and organized. Seeing Tom Hardy in a speech somewhere in the film where he pours his heart out about what he's been up to lately is just really different considering what you've seen him in lately. And it's like all these people and how good an actor they are, it's almost like it's almost a showreel. If anything.
No, I agree. The only, my only small niggle I think I would probably have on the entire film would be actually something to do with Tom Hardy, which I think his performance was fantastic. But there was something about his dialect that he was actually putting on, because he wasn't doing his normal voice. He was actually, there was a strange inflection on it. And I actually found out afterwards that the character is supposed to be Australian, and it didn't work.
I never would have picked it was supposed to be an Australian accent.
No, he's an Australian in the book as well. And it's like he's supposed to have been an Australian. So there is an odd, he's got an odd inflection. I thought maybe he was supposed to be South African or something.
That's right. I remember this scandal. Yeah, it was Kim Philby or something where he was meant to be. I'm not sure. Because there's a whole lot of...
And when I found out that he was supposed to be Australian, I went, oh, okay, that's what's wrong. He just can't do it. And so he's just kind of doing something to make it sound like he's different. And that would be my only niggle, is the fact he didn't quite nail his location, where he was from. But I thought his emotional performance was fantastic. He put a lot. I mean, I love Tom Hardy. There was a lot in there. And I really liked the girl as well. And I don't know what her name is. She was a newcomer, I think, wasn't she? The girl that he was trying to save.
I've seen her before somewhere. I just can't remember.
I was a bit distracted by the mole on her lip, but you know, other than that, I thought she was a
superficial man.
I know, I can't help myself. But I thought she was actually really good as an actress as well. I thought it could be Connie Sachs. I'm not sure. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I thought she was actually really good. I thought overall all the performers were really strong. But I want to talk about Benedict Cumberbatch for a second.
Because
I love Benedict Cumberbatch. For those who don't know who he is, he's probably best known as playing Sherlock in the new Sherlock series.
That's right.
And apparently he's going to be the voice of Smaug in The Hobbit.
And he's also the villain in the new Star Trek film.
That's right. He's in the new Star Trek film. That's right. Mm. Yeah, that's right. He's just been cast as the villain. That's right. And he's also in War Horse.
Yes.
Which I haven't seen yet, but he's in War Horse as well.
His scenes, and he plays opposite Tom Hiddleston in most of his scenes, are probably some of the strongest in the film.
Oh, fantastic. Mm. Now, I really like him, and I really like the series Sherlock. I think the series Sherlock is fantastic. And he is so good as Sherlock. And he was so good as the kind of the green spy that Smiley adopts, because he needs somebody that he can entrust. And there is a real sense of, A, he knows his job, but B, there is still that sense of awkwardness to what he's doing. And as I say, that library scene is just a work of genius. The amount of tension that is built in that scene. That's the tensest scene in the whole film.
Definitely. And that's the most spy-like scene in the whole film.
Absolutely. And who could ever have guessed that you could make a trip to the library that suspenseful?
Oh, I'd believe it.
Of course, you're a librarian.
Just wanted to throw out an interesting fact I just stumbled across. Yep. He was actually also the negotiator in Four Lions, Dave. I just thought you might find that interesting.
Oh, my God. I didn't even think of that.
No, yeah, neither did I.
I got to go back and watch that again now.
Yeah. Anyway.
I still stand by the fact that if they ever need a new Doctor Who, I think he could be Doctor Who.
Yes, I was going to say exactly that. He'd be a fantastic Doctor Who.
Absolutely. All right, should we do a quick spoiler section on this one?
Let's do it.
Sure.
Let's do it. All right, so as we said last week, we'll do the same thing again this week. You got your Claxton ready there, Richard?
I've finger poised.
Okay. We're going to go into a spoiler section. I will put the time codes in the show notes, so if you want to, and they show up in your iPod screen as well. So if you want to skip this, just fast forward through the time codes, and you will be at the other side. It'll only be about 5 minutes. We'll just talk about some of our favorite stuff from Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, which could be deemed as spoilerish. So hit us, Richard, now. And that would make us in a spoiler zone. All right. So, did you see Mark Strong coming back? Did you see that coming?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I did.
I actually didn't at first. And it's funny because I kind of was leaning that way because they were the way they were talking was like there was something still going on, but I was really surprised when they killed him off in the first scene.
Honestly, I just didn't buy it. I thought it was too convenient that they would take someone so good and so strong and definitely set him up so strongly and then and just kill him in the high first billing. 2 minutes.
And that was the thing that got me. I thought, wow, that's bold to knock him off so soon. The scenes between him and that kid in the school grounds. Really interesting. That was and at first I was trying to figure out what they were going with there, but it was that whole outsider thing, and I was really enjoying that. But I was really, and it was actually quite moving when he finally told the kid to go away, and leave him alone. You know, and it's like because they built that relationship, and he kind of built that kid up. I thought that was really good. Now, what for you guys? Anything that stood out for you?
I couldn't really talk about this before because it is mildly spoilerish, just because of the scene that it's in, but I wanted to just bring up, how amazed that I was. I was talking about this with, a friend of mine, Nathan, who's a DLC boy, and, he actually brought up, he was like, I love the way that this film takes pacing and, does things that films just do not do anymore. Things like where a phone will ring and Smiley will, or the door will, and someone will knock on the door, and then the next scene is them in the car. Just no time wasted with anything in between, just straight from one point to another. And the other thing that was controls death in the film, where it's like literally one scene, one shot, him in the bed, boom, and we move on. Because it's not important how he died or the shock of his death or whatever. We're following a storyline here. And it was it's just a very interesting way of shooting, and I was I personally was really into it. Yeah, I thought it really worked.
I agree. I thought, yeah, no, they don't waste time on the fat on this film. They need to get to the meat of it because there's a lot going on. Richard?
Yeah, look, I don't know if this is really a specific spoiler moment, but it's sort of it's spoiler-ish because of where it sort of ends up. Just this kind of the trajectory of Gary Oldman's character as well and how it ends up and how he exudes this power throughout the film without, and it's growing power without seemingly overtly doing huge amounts of activity. So, for example, just sitting still at various points, you realize that his power has grown. And I guess the spoiler part of this is where he ends up at the very end, in taking the seat of control. And he doesn't, there's nothing. But it's not like, well, the throne's yours now, Smiley, off you go. It's just he walks down, sits down, and that's it. And then you think, and then it's just a very, very powerful little moment. But it's a very powerful moment because it's completely within his character. He's just so still in it, and it's like, you know, and I love that about his character, that even throughout this whole thing, he's just maintained this. The smiliness to
it. Well, he never wavered at all. No. There was never a moment in this film where you go, well, maybe he's the double agent. You never feel that at all. You go, this is a man who absolutely 100% is part of the circus. And he was ousted unfairly when Control got ousted. You know what I mean? And because he was loyal to Control, he went with him. And there was no argument because he went wherever Control went. And you never doubted his loyalty. You know, and I love that about that character. It's such pure character work.
Staying on his character for a moment, one of my other favorite moments in the film is the one time you hear him raise his voice, which is right at the end with Colin Firth, and they're having that conversation, and he says, well, I wasn't this, I wasn't that, and then he just has that one moment where he says, well, what are you then? And it just comes out so strongly that it just deafens the room. Like everything in that moment, everybody was silent, even the noisy ones in my cinema, because it's just such, you've never heard him do that in the rest of the film, and that's why that moment worked really well for me.
Did you guys know it was Colin Firth? Who did you suspect?
I didn't want to do that. It was weird. It was the first time in a long time because I watched A, so many horrors, and B, so many thrillers. I have a tendency to do that. But with this film, I didn't want to wreck the experience by trying feebly to grasp which character, because it was energy that I needed to use to try and figure out what was going on.
I'm actually glad it was Colin Firth, because all the way through it, I had it in my head that it was going to be Kieran Hines, and purely because it's very stereotype. It's very it's because he's played Russians in other films, and he's got that very strong, you know, kind of Ukrainian look to him. And you sit there and go, it's got to be him. You know what I mean? It's so, and you know it's not going to be Toby Jones because it was almost too obvious that Toby Jones would be the spy. So it was really actually refreshing that it was Colin Firth because he was kind of the pretty boy socialite, you know, and all this sort of stuff. And it was kind of like, it was a nice change. Who did you suspect, Richard?
You know, it's funny. It didn't even occur to me to suspect. Like, you know, I mean, obviously that's what the film's about, but I just sort of went with this film. And so like when it was revealed at the end, it was a genuine shock for me because I actually just felt like, I, you know, whether it was conscious or not, maybe not as consciously as Josh was saying, but I just plodded through the film. It's just wanting to pay attention to the film. And I think because I did that, I was kind of at the same spot Smiley was throughout the whole film, you know?
I've got a question for you guys. One scene that left me kind of just going, like I wasn't quite sure what they were trying to say with the scene. So, and I really liked it because it's actually quite a powerful scene. I wasn't quite sure what the meaning behind it was. Now, it's when they're at the party, you know, the flashback scene, and they start singing the Russian national anthem. And one of them goes, no, we shouldn't be doing that here. And they all stop. What do you think they were trying to say with that
scene? I think it's out of bad taste. That was the sense that I got it from because they are such a – it was an area of such civil obedience. And it's kind of to be doing something like that is almost mocking the Russians by kind of doing it. And that was kind of the scene. Really, I think mainly the reason it was playing was for the impact of what happens during that scene.
Right.
Because that was a sense that I got, like the sound and the ferocity of that kind of music just works so much more powerfully when you see the reveal of him stumbling over his wife having sex with someone in the garden. The music just works so well for that scene.
Ah, and speaking of, we'll make this the last one and we'll move on, but speaking of subtlety, how beautifully filmed was it from Thomas Alfredson's, on Thomas and Alfredson's behalf, was it to indicate that the affair had taken place between Colin Firth and Smiley's wife, just that he had his shoes off? That is just brilliant. That is just, and it's all it took for him to know that this had actually taken place. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's such a beautifully subtle thing to do. And you sit there and go, you didn't need to overstate it. You didn't have to have big fights about it. You know, you just had to have the shoes off and you knew he knew.
And I think that's probably the thing that you say about the whole film. Nothing is handed to you at all.
No.
And it's kind of because these are people who were trained to observe the tiniest things. So are we. We're meant to do that as well. So
that's fantastic stuff. All right. Spoiler section over. How's that sound? You got a Claxton for me?
Do I have to do it again?
All right. You don't have to.
Or more appropriately, because this is a spy film, I could do.
You've been wanting to play that all night. I know.
I have.
All right. Let's move on to our mailbag here. We haven't had one for a while, and we got a mail from our friend from Mike from Canada. He hasn't written to us for a while, so I'll read this out. Just bear with me, because at first it may not make sense. and the reason why we're doing mail first here is because it actually leads to our list of five, which our list of five is a request from Mike from Canada. All right, so he says, "Dear the Real Bits, first time writer." He says, "First time writer, I haven't read anything on your site, but I like your name. It's clever, not as clever as Raw DLC, but at least I know what your site is about." He says, "Oh shit, my bad. Sorry, wrong site. Speaking of shit, how about a list of five great number twos?" And in brackets, he clarifies that by saying sidekicks, henchmen, what have you. He says, "Like Random Task or Steve Zahn from Sahara. I would like to thank your significant others for supporting the three of you and your wacky podcast adventures, because if it weren't for Film Actually, I would have never watched Fright Night or Runaway. I apologize for falling behind on your vaulted list for the list of five and this long email. Yours truly, Mike from Canada." So, Mike from Canada, it's great to hear from you again. all right, so he wants a list of five number twos. So basically sidekicks, henchmen, what have you. And I said to you guys, I said, okay, we'll do a five great number twos. Interpret that list any way you like. All right, so let's move into our list of five and see how we go. What do you reckon?
Let's do it.
All right, who wants to go first? Oh, look at that. Just jumping
in. Okay, I'll do it then.
All right, Richard's going first. All right.
The reason I'm doing this first is because...
I feel the need. The need for speed.
So, Goose from Top Gun.
Wow. Goose from Top Gun. You're going to have a soundbite for all of them, aren't you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. This list will go on all night long. All right. So you're using Goose from Top Gun. Fair enough. My number five is Lieutenant Sam Weinberg. And you're all going, who?
Who?
That's Kevin Pollak's character from A Few Good Men. Who I always loved that character because he follows Tom Cruise around the entire film. And when introduced to Jessup, Jack Nicholson character. Jack Nicholson, you know, shakes Tom Cruise's hand. He says, hello, I'm, you know, current Lieutenant Caffey or whatever his name is. And he goes and shakes Kevin Pollak's hand. And Kevin Pollak answers, I have no official responsibility here whatsoever. Which is, to this day, one of my favorite lines of all time. So I'm going to give it to him as a number two. Josh, you're number five.
Okay, now, my list, I was told about this list, and Dave, I'm not trying to call you out as unprofessional here, I'm just saying that I was told about this list with about an hour to write it up, and I had a slightly different understanding. What?
excuses.
No. My excuse is not that. My excuse is that I took it a slightly different aspect. So, what I am doing is, my list is people that are like number twos, so people that usually generally get a second in charge role in whatever films that they're in, so they're the sidekick or the buddy or whatever, but they have a particular style that they play, and I've given an example, okay?
Okay.
Is that cool?
Yeah, that's cool.
All right, so my number five and probably my easiest and most obvious on the list is Samuel L. Jackson, who plays amazing roles no matter where he is and whatever side character he's playing, but Pulp Fiction would be my favorite.
Damn straight. Absolutely. Yep. No, very, very good. Very good. Richard, you're number four.
I voted for number four because...
If you vote for me, all of your wildest dreams will come true.
That was Petro from Napoleon Dynamite.
Do we actually need to play a clip from all of them? Yeah, why not?
Look,
all
they get better clips. The next clip you're going to love.
All right, no problem. My number four is Short Round from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yes.
No more parachutes.
That type of love, Dr. John.
Josh, your number four.
My number four is Benicio del Toro because he is awesome in most things. But yeah, I think Fear and Loathing is still the best.
Oh, damn straight. Ever did.
Yes.
Yeah, there's something about that character just wanting to carve a Z in Johnny Depp's forehead that I will never quite forget.
Damn straight. Richard, your number three.
My number three is Russell Ziske. Played by Harold Ramis in Stripes.
Nice.
No, I'm waiting for the clip.
And the clip is because of this fabulous exchange and Russell Ziske's fabulous response.
Are either of you homosexuals?
You mean like flaming or?
Well, it's a standard question we have to ask.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Will they send us somewhere special?
That to clarify, they were trying to join the
Yes, I love that film. I love that film indeed. All right. My number three is Jack Black from High Fidelity.
Oh, yeah. Man. You know what? He was so close to being on my list. I left him off.
I thought about that, too.
He was actually a last-minute addition to the list, and my lovely wife, Katie, was the one who suggested him. I went, oh, man, how could I have forgotten?
Carlos Biswell.
Josh, you're number three.
My number three is a less funny one for sure, but Ethan Hawke, who usually plays a decent sort of side character, but Training Day was actually my one. Big shoes to stand against when you're standing against somebody like Denzel Washington, and he plays the role perfectly to be that on and off the set, if you know what I mean.
I actually really like that film. I got to watch it again.
Dude, I've watched that film so many times.
Richard, you're number two.
My number two is... Oh, no, wrong one.
Your number two is a Claxton. All right.
My number two is as follows.
When Cameron was in Egypt's land, let my Cameron go.
It's Cameron Fry from Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
I love that
good
character.
Good choice. Good choice.
all right. My number two is Samwise Gamgee from the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Nice. Fair enough.
Yeah, look, you know, homosexual overtones aside, he is a great sidekick to Frodo.
He's not homosexual, but he is willing to learn.
He's willing to, will they send him somewhere special? Josh, you're number two.
The man who's probably played more second roles than anyone in the world, I think, if you actually wait it out, but John Goodman, but most memorable for The Big Lebowski.
Oh, yes. Damn straight.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up, Donnie.
We don't roll on the Shabbos.
That was definitely on my short list.
All right, here we go. Round of number ones. Richard, your number one.
Number one is Donald O'Connor from Singing in the Rain.
Very good. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, and here we go.
Now look at me. I got no glory. I got no fame. I got no big mansions. I got no money. But I've got... What have I got?
He's great. I mean, he in that movie, he has the Make 'em Laugh dance sequence, which I was almost going to put a clip from that, where he runs up the wall not once but twice.
Yeah. So, no, we actually watched that on TV just the other night.
It's an amazing sequence. Yeah.
It's a great film. My number one is Chewbacca. Chew motherfucking Backer. Come on. This is He's the ultimate sidekick as far as I'm concerned. Han Solo is nothing without his Chewie. That sounds terrible.
He really isn't. Without that big hairy Wookiee, he is nothing.
That's right.
He's just Harrison Ford like in every other film.
Absolutely. Get this giant walking carpet out of my way. All right. Josh, bring us home with your number one.
My number one is the man that will solidify me going to see a film no matter what position he's in. Even if he's like the third or fourth tiered build character, or even if he's just on the front DVD cover, Jean Reno will always make me go see a film just because he's awesome. But Ronin is the film in particular that I'm thinking about. Where he plays a really good balance to De Niro's character.
Oh, absolutely. He's very good. Can I also throw out, you know, you're talking about Jean Reno and you were talking about John Goodman always being a number two.
Yeah.
I actually almost pondered doing a list completely of one particular actor who also seems to always appear as number twos. And that was Steve Zahn.
Yeah.
I actually had a list at one point that consisted of Out of Sight, Daddy Daycare, Sahara, and You've Got Mail, and then I gave up. But I was actually thinking you could actually make the entire list Steve Zahn.
Yeah, you really could. That man's the unsung hero of the movie. He just looks like he tries so hard. I bet he's the nicest guy on set.
Oh, I bet he is. I got a couple of also-rans. These are ones I didn't put on there because I could have swore Richard was going to use one of them, which, of course, was Donkey.
I had a sound queued up for it and everything.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, hang on. I'll see. I took the sound off the board, but you keep talking.
I'll keep talking. And the other one, of course, was Spock. Mr. Spock.
Well, yes, well,
again,
chosen.
Had thought of it,
you know. But they didn't quite make the list, but they were there. Josh, we have forgotten a section.
I know we have,
and we're gonna.
Want to bring it up.
Oh, I know. We're gonna do it right now.
there we go.
Normally,
fuck
not
protocol.
Fuck
Let's
protocol.
Just throw it out the window.
Normally, we would do this in the what we've been watching section, but we kind of got carried away and went straight through and did this. But we actually have a new section on the show as of this week, and it'll be here every week, and it'll be early in the
doing
show.
This, you're not even doing this for me. You're doing this so you can play your soundbite.
Well, there is that too. But here we go. Here we go.
I'm digging this.
Josh's Bargain Basement.
Good evening.
All right, Josh, welcome to Josh's Bargain Basement. Josh, what is the Bargain Basement film for this week?
As I've said in the written review, which will show up on the site later in the week, I was pretty surprised at this one because I have been digging in the basement for a very long time and picking out these horrible, disturbing films. Not disturbing because of their visual presence, just because they are actually just awful films and deserve to be where they are. But I picked out Cujo, which is a horror film. Now, this film surprised me so much because, unlike most people, I've heard it referenced. And yes, as a horror fan, you can be shocked I haven't seen it. But it just never brushed past me. And I was genuinely surprised with this film. I actually really enjoyed it. It's definitely not perfect. It's far, far, far from perfect. But when you're basing it out of a bargain basement system, this is about the best.
And you're comparing it next to Pulse 2, right?
This is about the best pick I think I've pulled out in probably about a year and a half. And this is a DVD I picked up for $4, and it was worth every cent.
Man, I'll buy it for $4.
Dude, it is a scary thing to see a Saint Bernard, really terrifying. Like this thing is covered in goo. It just slowly deteriorates as the film continues. It genuinely looks pissed off all the time. I actually did some research because I was like, this looks like animal cruelty. Like, there's a lot of points where I was like, there is no way this animal cannot be, beaten or whatever. But it turned out things like when it's trying to get into the car in one scene in the film where it's smashing at this window trying to get in, it's actually just trying to get its favorite toy. And they put the toy inside the car, and that's why it rampantly crawls up the side of the car trying to get in. Also, the goo all over its face was apparently just like egg yolk and sugar, which is why it keeps licking it off the whole time, which I thought was really interesting and also quite disturbing. But incredibly enjoyed this film. Cannot recommend it enough. If you're a horror fan, $4. It'll be in your list. Everybody will come past your house and go, oh, Cujo, awesome. And if you're not, then you'll get a decent film out of it.
Fantastic. No, I will buy that. Actually, I was around and conscious and lucid during the days of Cujo's release. And it was a bit of a zeitgeist. I mean, everybody was talking about Cujo, and it's made its way into popular culture in many ways. I mean, I was talking to Josh before the show, and I was saying that there's a scene in Fletch, the old Chevy Chase film, where he walks into an abandoned house, basically, and it's all, you know, kind of quiet, and he's looking around like he's all very nervous, and he just goes, Cujo? So it's kind of made its way into popular culture, this film, and probably the second best performance by Dee Wallace, who is the mother from E.T. She's not actually a particularly good actress, but certain directors get stuff out of her. Spielberg got a lot out of her for E.T. And she actually looked terrified in Cujo. Mm. You know, so I'd like to see it again.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting film, man. The other thing that I found interesting is seeing the pairing again of her and the husband from The Howling.
Yeah, and you know who he is, don't you?
Yeah, they were husband and wife.
That's right. That's why she was Dee Wallace Stone, because his last name was Stone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was interesting just to see them and shagging in the film, which I thought was quite funny. I was like, because it's like now, referential to real life.
What's the order? Was The Howling first or that one first?
Sure The Howling was
Howling was 81, I think, and I think Cujo is 83.
Yes, I actually think you're right on both accounts. Man, you are amazing.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, I was looking up before, and then I've lost the page, but I think that's what I saw.
I'm just, yeah.
Cujo was 83, and Howling was 81.
And E.T. was smack bang in the middle at 82.
There you go. All right, so yeah, so they would have met during the making of The Howling. Mm-hmm. Probably. That would be my guess. Because she didn't adopt Stone in her name until later. Because during E.T., she was just Dee Wallace. So there you go. So thank you very much, Josh. You've inspired me to go out and dig through a bargain basement. I got to go find it.
Do it. It's worth it. Cool. Absolutely.
Richard, have you seen Cujo?
I have, but a long, long time ago.
Cool. I think we're both going to go hit JB, huh?
I think so.
All right.
Bucks. That's a bargain. Oh, I can just go down the road and borrow Josh's coffee.
Well, there is
that too. Yeah, there's that too.
Yeah. That's possible too. The other little bit of news we have this week before we get out of here, we mentioned this in the Behind the Panel show already, but I think we should mention here as well because we have two different audiences. Nicholas, the little geek McVeigh, my son, his Opus Smile has finally hit YouTube. It's out. It's done.
Nice.
His movie is finally out, and you'll hear lots of familiar voices in it because we all helped him out and we all supplied voices. And I have a couple clips here. Shall we play a couple clips?
I think so.
I think this superstar needs to be played. Here we go.
Hey, Michael, I received the file she gave me. Pretty good. Well, he's probably gone home already. Oh, well, work to do. That's weird. Power must be out. It's really dark in here.
What a star.
That's weird. It's really dark in here. I originally did that voice.
Seriously,
I think...
you can't do his voice, man. I'm sorry.
I know. I tried. But I couldn't. I originally did that voice as Jimmy Stewart.
The director
just shut me down because I was really going, well, that's weird. It's really dark in here.
We also have this clip. I have another clip here. Let's play this clip. This is another superstar in the making. Here we go.
What's the situation, Jim?
There have been a lot of unexplained murders in Gotham lately. They all seem to be smiling. Gives me the creeps. Just this morning, the deputy mayor was murdered the same way as all these other people. The mayor wants the person behind this locked up for a really long time.
I'm on it, Jim.
Oh, and Batman. I hate it when he does that.
Now, can I tell you, it's a very strange experience talking to yourself.
Yeah.
Because I did both voices there. Now, look, the film is really good. He's pulled it together really, really well. And we do have to make special note. We talked about this in panels as well. The music is phenomenal. My son actually made contact with this composer who actually wrote an original score for the film. And
That's so cool.
The score is awesome. I have a sample here. Let's have a quick little listen to this. This is a little bit of the end credit music from Smile by Andrew Gerlicher for Nicholas's film. How cool is that?
That's pretty damn
amazing.
Cool.
Yeah, so
he wanted his themes for our shows.
Well, yeah, I think we might have to talk to him. go check it out. You can find it embedded at geekactually.com. You can find it embedded at therealbits.com. And you can find it, of course, at youtube.com/Nicky McVeigh. He would really, really like the hits and the subscribes, so go for it. He's been working on this film for 6 months. It's a Lego animated fan film of Batman, and it's really fun. It's really well, really well done. And Josh, you're in there too.
I am.
You are. I think
I don't even remember that. I'm going to go back and rewatch it. Yeah. I don't even remember hearing my own voice, and I've already seen the video.
You have a credit at the end, and I believe one of your lines is, "Everybody, this is a bank holdup," or something like that.
It's Josh Philpott as the robber. Introducing Josh Philpott.
Fantastic. So go check that out. All right, we got to finish this show up. We got to wrap a bow around this puppy and get out of here. Richard, where can people find out more about you on the internet?
You've already mentioned it, but you can find me at therealbits.com. That's RELBits.com. And you can also find me on Twitter at DVDBits.
Fantastic. Josh, where can people find out more about you?
On the internet.
Oh, just out there somewhere.
Theinternet.com.
RawDLC.com is a gaming website. Go over and check it out. There are two things that you should check out in particular. I did an interview recently with the lead designer on a game called Kingdoms of Amalur, and it is a very cool interview. And also, I went to an event recently, which was absolutely awesome. It had the darkness, it had arcade machines, and it had an alcoholic milk bar.
Hold on, did you say the darkness?
It's really dark
yes.
in here.
like that, except for, you know, with the dying and the screaming and the
hey.
I actually really, 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 really want to play the Kingdom of Amalur. I've been hearing really good things about this game.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you're right on every account.
Apparently this is a first time game by the creator, and it is staggering.
Yeah, look, I played 3 hours of it, and it is it hasn't left my mind. Like, I'm literally fiending for this game, and I'm not kidding. Like,
when
it's the weirdest thing.
When does it get released? Because there's a beta
it's
out now.
The 7th of next month.
Fantastic. I want to play this game. I want to play it. Apparently, the combat system is amazing.
Yeah, very good combat, very good action, interesting storyline, and Todd McFarlane was on the team, and also one of the lead people from Oblivion. as well.
Fantastic. Wow. Right. Is that coming out across all platforms, or is that?
It is coming across most platforms. I'm not sure about PC. That's the only one I'm not sure about.
No, it is PC as well. No, it is PC.
Oh, there you go. Yep. Fantastic.
Yeah, PC as well. I'll be already looking at PC or Xbox. I'm not sure which one yet. But I'm looking forward to that one. All right. You can find out more about me by going to geekactually.com. There's a big button that says follow us, and there's all our links like emails and everything else. If you agree or disagree with anything we've had to say on the show, feedback@filmactually.com is the way you said that to. And our voicemail line, 0280113167, or you can Skype, leave a message via Skype, you know that thing. our Skype ID is geekactually, all one word. Quick shout outs to our friends, Real Junkies, over at weekendronan.com, or find them on iTunes. Spell it with two E's, not the real as in the other way. They do movie podcasts like us, but they fuel by tequila. They're a lot of fun. They've got a lot of movie reviews up right now, so check them out. And Brad and Charlie over at Rebound Radio, always check them out. They're our good buddies, and they do a lot of good work over there as well. I think that's it. I think we're done. Have you got anything to add?
No, I'm good.
What? All right, with Richard moaning in the corner, we're going to say go see more movies. You don't see enough movies. All of life's questions are answered in the movies, and we'll see you all next week. And make sure you look for Geek Action News on the feed. Good night, everybody. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.